Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
James Bonding Podcast
with Matthews, Myra, and Gorley.
The blast shield down, I think.
Matthews, Gorley, and Myra Podcast of James Bond. Matthews, Gorley, and Myra Podcast of James Bond. James Bonding Podcast.
Did I get it right?
Almost.
Really?
That's our theme song. Welcome back to James Bonding, everybody. The living daylights as I speak and breathe. I don't know if that's the saying.
It's close
it
enough.
Now.
I'm Matt Gorley. I was not given headphones for that opening segment, so I had to guess.
I am Matt Myra, demanded headphones. And joining us from the Pop My Culture Podcast and for San Francisco Sketch Fest, Cole Stratton. Cole.
Hey, guys.
Welcome. I'm sorry about all the technical difficulties Matt Gorley caused.
Whoa.
I am really sorry
about that.
I have to
say.
The guy is like breaking computers left and right. He comes in here and breaks the podcast.
I feel guilty wearing these headphones, though.
No,
I feel like I don't need these cans and they should go to Matt. I never use them.
You never use them when you're doing your podcast?
Yeah, we don't
use them for Super Ego either.
Interesting.
Yeah. So
I
feel guilty. I mean, it's neat. It's interesting.
We know you like headphones because you've got a backpack full of about... How many do you say you have in there? Eight?
I brought like six headphones.
And these are not earbuds. These are over-the-ear headphones.
Yeah, sure. You got your tiny Beats, okay? Your little Beats over here. You got some Shure Studio monitors, which I use when I'm guitar playing at home. I got my...
Do you own any guitars? I'm not aware.
I got a couple.
You should put some pictures of them.
Once or 100,000 of them.
To paint the picture, you rode up on your bicycle singing, headphones, got some headphones. And
gonna plug them into 90 guitars.
And then Hanna-Barbera demanded I pay them a royalty for singing the Flintstone theme song. Yes.
Great Gazoo delivered the subpoena, which is nice.
Oh, you saw him?
Yeah.
I thought only I could see him. This is amazing. Cole, thank you for being here. I know that you're a big fan of Living Daylights.
I am.
Which is a movie that I was not a big fan of.
Oh,
until
really?
I watched it.
Oh.
I just remember not enjoying it.
Oh, I like
what
it.
I will say.
I'll go on record right away.
So as we like to do on this podcast when we have a guest on, we like to say, hey, Where's your first James Bond experience?
When? Where? Who?
Well, I definitely watched him when I was growing up as a kid because my dad really liked him. I'm pretty sure Goldfinger is the first one I saw because that tends to be like the introductory thing for people.
That's
never seen
everybody's.
Bond.
That's like the Wrath of Khan of Star Trek movies.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
I made the mistake of Star Trek though of showing my girlfriend Star Trek 4 first, which makes no sense.
but that's a very friendly Star Trek.
It's funny and great, but it like plays with inside jokes based on what you know about the crew.
That's true.
And she knew nothing about them and was like, "What is going on?"
And also, if she were to follow up with another, she'd be like, "This is not what you sold me."
Right.
Nah. I was promised whales and comedy and San Francisco and.
But also, I mean, that's the third one of the trilogy. That's the mini trilogy of the Star Trek
that's
movies.
Right, yeah.
It goes Wrath of Khan, Search for Spock, and Voyage Home.
Yeah.
Really great movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two great movies.
One low price. Wait.
Two great movies and the Search for Spock.
Yeah.
You got Christopher Lloyd in there. So Goldfinger is your first one.
Yeah.
Do you then seek it out? Do you go, hey, look at this View to a Kill movie in theaters. I should go see this.
Well, that came out in 87, mm-hmm. which I always make the argument that 1987 was one of the greatest years for movies. If you like, just look back at everything that was released that year.
Was it 87 RoboCop year?
Wait a minute. What are you saying? View to a Kill came out in 87?
No, this one did.
Yeah, Living Daylight. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
So already it was like a great year for movies because you had Broadcast News and Last Emperor, Three Men and a Little...
Oh, you're thinking really great movies.
The Untouchables? Like the Untouchables.
Yeah, I believe that was that year. Three Amigos, Princess Bride.
Guys, I need to find out if RoboCop came out. Because if RoboCop came out in 87...
I think it's earlier than that.
No, RoboCop is either 87
or 88, yeah.
What?
It's a great year for movies to begin with. And I definitely saw it in the theater, Living Daylights. So I feel like it's the first one I saw in the theater. So there's
really?
That.
1987, RoboCop. Your
there you
theory
go.
Is sound.
87. Look up 87 for movies, people who are listening to this.
You know what it was? The cocaine.
From 87?
Yeah. Oh. The 1987 cut of cocaine was
You were
purer.
A big child cocaine addict,
yeah,
weren't you?
Yeah, I was huge into cocaine. Yeah. Right. Weirdly, a husky kid still, but loved the white stuff. So View to Kill was 85.
85, yeah.
Which was Back to the Future. Another great year. Guys, the 80s were a good year.
That was my summer, man. I must have seen View to a Kill a bunch of times. I just can't give you a number. Oh, God. Special time.
So View to a Kill comes out 85, which is Roger Moore's last movie. He's 56 years old.
Right.
As
or
James
57.
Bond.
He was 45 when he started in 73, so that makes him... What were we talking about? 86? What'd you say it was? 85?
85.
So he's 57.
57 years old.
Wow. Didn't he, want to quit, in the late 70s, after Moonraker?
For Your Eyes Only was originally going to be his last one, and that's why they screen-tested James Brolin and Sam Neill for Octopussy, which if you watch those, there's something to behold.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, Sam Neill, I thought, would have been a very good James Bond.
He's a little boring
Dr.
to me.
Dr. Grant.
I don't know what it is. Yeah.
I don't, why do you find him boring? I think he's great.
He's just
you know who's boring?
Who?
Timothy Dalton.
Oh, I like
he's
Timothy
very
Dalton.
Charming in this movie.
Yeah.
I think
he's good.
And he cares.
This is a very interesting, and we'll get into it in a minute, but did you go see License to Kill in the theater as well?
I did. Yeah.
Okay.
I think I saw all the ones after that. But that kind of started with my oh, yeah, you go to James Bond movies. Yeah. They're great.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Even Tomorrow Never Dies. You went to that one.
I went to all of them.
It's the only one I've not seen in the theater since Octopussy. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I made the right choice.
I disagree.
It's like going to pee during a movie in a scene that doesn't matter, you know?
I feel like all of them at least have sequences that are entertaining. I always just kind of looked at it that way.
Isn't it crazy how that one is the only one that doesn't?
I disagree with you entirely.
Just pushing your buttons, Cokehead.
Cokehead. Disney's Cokehead.
Disney's
Cokehead. Hey, guys, I got a great idea. What if we kick the girls out of our clubhouse?
Oh, Jesus. It's Gilbert Gottfried playing a CG character of Coke Kid.
Oh, Coke Kid.
However, the sequel, Disney's Heroin Tykes, did not go nearly as well.
I am into that.
You know, it only cost $5 million to make.
Yeah.
Made $7 million overseas.
Great overseas.
Did you see this in the theater?
I did not see it in the theater. I saw License to Kill in the theater. Oh. Here's what you have to remember about Little Man Myra.
Yeah.
In 1987... I was 4.
I see. And you were fighting in the Nicaraguan Civil War?
No, I was way into coke.
Oh, right. Well, that's why I asked. Listen, let me tell you something. This was at the height of my Bond fervor when Timothy Dalton was announced. They did all these, as they do press stuff, and there were all these magazine articles. And I still have these, newspaper clippings and magazine things from Premiere Magazine that I found the other day. And I went to see this thing, and I was so big into James Bond at this point.
This movie, I didn't remember it fondly.
When's the last time you'd seen it before this?
The first DVD release.
Seriously?
Yeah.
What about you, Cole?
I've seen it quite a few times. I just rewatched it before this just to kind of put it fresh in my brain.
Today.
But I watched it a couple of years ago again, too, and I think I've seen it every couple of years since then. I enjoy it.
This is one of those ones that I saw for the 4K restorations. Uh-huh. And then I saw it another time recently, so it's real fresh in my mind.
I gotta tell you, I really liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really liked it.
It's good. And I mean, we'll get to the end. That's my only issue with this movie.
Which ending?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, which ending and which bad guy?
There's so much happening.
It does
happening.
Do that a lot once it gets to the desert. And I'm kind of like, eh.
All right. So this is Timothy Dalton's first outrun as James Bond, first of two. We're seeing 50% of his body of work as James Bond here.
Yeah.
And promising start out the gate.
Great opening sequence.
Yeah, love it.
Love it.
They go to the island.
Gibraltar. Rock of Gibraltar.
Already, they're doing the thing that James Bond does great, which is you're in M's office. You're thinking, oh, we're in M's office. And then all of a sudden, he's in the back of a plane. That's Coke Kid again.
Well, you know, the opening sequence combines everyone's love of training sequences and paintball.
You know... Yeah. I do. I love seeing a training sequence now on the other side of it. You know what I mean? Because we saw the training sequence in From Russia with Love of how the Russians train.
Oh, yeah. Right. How the other
half
trains.
Which is with real bullets.
Right.
And then we see how the Brits train with pink paintballs.
Out on there. You're dead.
And they're not even so much paint. They're like powder. It was a strange thing.
M, for some reason, is very proud that the 00 section has been chosen to train.
Right. And by the way, two of those 00s are for shit.
Yeah, they're not very good.
The first guy is just a buffoon.
Gets stuck in the trees.
Yeah.
The first guy does get stuck in a tree.
And he's hired for his comedic face, too. His reactions are very Monty Python of, well, he might as well be wiping pie from his eyes, you know?
004
okay.
is the one that gets killed by having the rope cut while he's climbing.
Right.
I feel like he spends too much time requesting that he doesn't have the rope cut instead of grabbing onto the clearly grabbable rock.
There is that.
That's very true.
It's like, no, please, no. He could have done this.
At what point does MI6 train you not to appeal to the spy's better nature?
Yeah,
like to actually protect yourself.
Please, yeah.
If there is a moment of like, come on, old man. No. Oh, come on. Hello. And then,
that's not sporting.
And then he sends down the toe tag, which says, what does it say?
Smertspion.
Yep.
That's from the novels. That's from Casino Royale, I think.
And this is the last one to be actually based on a Fleming short story.
That's right. And if you want a good entry-level Fleming thing, read the short story. It's basically the sniper segment at the beginning of this movie. That's kind of straight from the Living Daylights short story. It's a goodie.
God, that
get
line,
in there.
Too.
Get in there. Which line?
Must have scared the Living Daylights.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
I only kill professionals.
Yeah, which is not true.
No.
I've seen him kill many an amateur.
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay.
That was just Timothy Dalton speaking.
So James Bond is on this training mission, and he watches a couple 00s bite the dust. Then, of course, he has a crazy scene where the car should have crashed 30,000 times.
Oh, a million times.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way that stays on the narrows of Gibraltar.
Ah, but it's fun to watch.
The narrows plus the windshield is completely covered with paint.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, from the time that guy tried to stop that truck with the paintball.
And, of course, the truck is full of explosives like the
Elfinar
military bases.
Well, it says clearly written on the back, explosives.
Right.
I was surprised to see speed ramping in this still, that they were undercranking the camera at times. I feel like that's such a 60s Connery era Bond thing, but they're still creeping in. There's times when he was on top of the thing and it would be in fast motion.
Right.
Also, this tiny island of Gibraltar seems like it has a lovely tourist attraction.
Yeah.
Like, there's like a group just sitting there eating, a lot of people getting out of the way.
I have heard that if you go there that the monkeys are really, really a problem. They will harass you and beat you.
Oh, I was watching that thinking, we get it.
I wonder if those were like happy accidents. Like, monkeys in the shot again. Just go with it.
Just go with it.
Probably.
So the... Then he sends the explosive jeep off the
side of the rock.
Side of the rock once again.
Cliff?
Again.
Is that the word you're looking for?
Okay. I don't know. I was gonna call it a mountain, but it's not really a mountain. And anyway, don't worry about it. The point is, James Bond escapes only to land on a yacht with a beautiful lady.
Who are you?
Who is? How do we say this about her? She's bored with all the men.
Yeah,
Gibraltar's?
It's just tennis pros.
Yeah,
tennis pros.
She's bored with the
I
good
want to
life.
Meet a meal man.
But then
Margot.
Okay, so here's what happens. She's chatting with Margot. She's chatting up Margot. Hang on, I gotta go back a little bit further here. Make this resize this. So chatting with Margot. James Bond has just witnessed a plot where two 00 agents have been murdered.
Right.
So his instinct. Listen to the, you can't even say alert, like, There's no urgency in his voice whatsoever when he finally lands on the... Now I'm going to play this here, and I'm just going
to... Oh, and I won't be able to hear it because I wasn't given headphones, I see. Huh?
You're
going to hear
it.
Oh, here we go. Well, these are just too warm.
The end out of the there. Guys, a lot of technical issues happening on this James Bond podcast.
You should see what the table looks like.
You really don't.
But playboys and tennis pros. If only I could find a real man.
Oh, we need a real man, of course. James Bond shows up. We'll split down.
I need to use your phone. Should call you back.
It's huge.
Who are you?
Here he goes. Here James Bond is calling in the fact that two 00 agents have been killed in a training exercise by some evil man with some crazy plot.
Bond. Exercise Control 007 here. I'll report in an hour.
Won't you join me?
Better make that two.
Titles.
Make that two.
Look, they're dead. They're not coming back.
You're
That's
right.
True.
You're right.
He's
got
to get to some humping. He took care of the guy.
James Bond is like, it's going to take me an hour to fuck this girl.
Right.
And
an hour
no, it's
going to
take 2 hours.
No. I think he's saying it'll take him an hour to get there. I think he's giving himself an hour
oh, right.
of yeah. sexy time.
You're right. Okay.
Then we jump into the credit sequence featuring the Band of the Moment.
Band of the last moment. It wasn't even of this time. I mean, their big hit, Take On Me, was in the early, mid-80s.
Yeah.
So I remember when they announced this band, even thinking, like, that doesn't seem, like, good.
Well, this but I like hilarious this song. Is this song is also on one of their albums. Their version is on their second
the
album, Stay On These Roads. It doesn't have the strings, really. It's just got, like, keyboards or whatever. And Morten Harkett, like, the lead singer, Vaha, said that, like, well, you know, I like our version better, the one that's on our album. But, you know, John Barry did some great things, like made it more Bond. It's like, you idiots.
They didn't, notoriously didn't get along.
Yeah.
It's John Barry and
how do you
Aha.
not get along with John Barry? He seems lovely.
Doesn't he?
He really?
Not at all, like a cranky man.
Yeah.
This is his last film. We should celebrate him
let's
right
celebrate.
Now. Last
work
Bond film.
Barry.
Yeah. But before we get to that, though, Dalton's delivery of Bond, James Bond, the iconic line. If I remember correctly, I read somewhere where he was like, I'm going to underplay it. But he underplays it so much so that it feels
he tosses it off.
Noticeable.
Well, it's actually right here.
It's almost, Bond James.
Guys, don't worry. I'm just going to scoot this over. He does it right when he lands on the plane. She says, who are you?
It's so tossed away. It's almost,
it's really tossed away.
It's almost
very
weird.
I
need to use your phone. Should call you back.
Who are you?
Bond. James Bond.
You know what I mean? It's a little too like James the lady.
Well, he's
protest,
in the middle of like handling this phone that probably has those. Remember those battery packs that looked like it was just three AA batteries
and
a little wire coming out?
Yeah. And other, she's been yapping with Margot for an hour.
But it's the only time when I don't really believe his performance because I think he's a really good actor. And look at him. He looks good.
He does look good. His hair is not quite as thin as it is in License to Kill.
He just looks good. He looks like a Bond to me.
And yet this one was almost Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, that's right.
Because they had like signed him to it, and then Remington Steele folks heard of that and then ordered more episodes of that, and then the Bond camp was like, no.
And they did it on the last day.
The last possible day.
Yeah. Oh.
So that screwed him out of that deal.
I wonder how I would have felt
I
about
wonder
him
how,
if I got him a little earlier.
You would have had some newspaper clippings.
I don't... Yeah, good question. I wonder.
Of could course you a, would have.
Well, yeah, I would have.
Of course you would have. You would look back on it much more fondly than you do now.
What do you guys think of this Aha song, though?
Don't like it.
No?
I love it.
I like it.
Guys...
I love the Barry version for sure, because those... Bop, 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 bop.
That's great. Yeah, I think it's like, the Barry touches that make the song. The song is catchy enough, but that's what makes it really feel like a Bond song, and it's great.
And that horn blast is straight out of Diamonds Are Forever. Diamonds Are Forever. Yeah, it's the same kind of. Oh, it's so good.
So
but this is his most synthy score.
Well, I think
for
he's
sure.
just trying to go with the times.
Yeah, sure.
There's lots of like little beats drop behind it and stuff.
Yeah, let's hear a little bit of this song, shall we? I love how she floats away. Like, this is like, I feel like this is Maurice Binder going like, guys, I don't know anymore.
I feel like he's like, we have the Y for 90 minutes.
Just like,
as many shots as we can in the pool.
Cubby said he'd take care of the pool. I don't know anymore. Just get in here and get out. Quick. But yeah, it's not my favorite title sequence.
Was AHA bigger in Europe at the time, and that's why
I think they had a string of hits in the UK.
More life there.
But this, you know, also, you know what I don't like in these, in particularly this title sequence, is the fact that you can I don't want to so clearly see these women's faces.
Yeah, these are very clear.
I prefer the silhouettiness of it all.
Yeah. I mean, I like when the title first pops up and it's got the extreme close up of the woman's face and like the old, like, school lettering in front. I like that, but.
Yeah. So we jump in, where is this in Russia?
Bratislava.
Oh.
Yeah.
Bratislava.
One of the Slovies.
Groznoja Bazaznia.
Where James is meeting the guy who wins the British off in this movie.
Yep. Saunders.
Saunders.
Yes.
Is Saunders a 00?
No. Because isn't that why he's just so by the book and stuffy? And he's like a...
Article 25.
He's kind of a bureaucrat or something.
He's a tool.
Yeah.
He's a total tool.
Yeah.
I'm going to just play this with no sound for a little bit while it catches up to us. So James is supposed to assassinate. There's a defector, a Russian defector from Russian military KGB who's going to defect over to the other side, and everyone's excited about it. The guy requests James Bond as his protection. There's going to be a sniper, and we see that the sniper is a pretty hot cello player named Marion Diabo.
Who is the first cousin of Olivia Diabo.
Who was
the sister on Wonder Years.
Yes.
Look at how the three of us did that just now.
Teamwork.
Round robin stream of consciousness.
She also, in the episode True Q of season 6 of Star Trek The Next Generation, she played... Wake up, Matt! I'm sorry, I started talking about Star Trek again.
Let me see that cocaine was. Do you remember how they made such a big deal that between Roger Moore and this because of the rise of AIDS and everything that Bond was going to be monogamous in this? Although you can argue he gets down with Margot's friend there on the
right.
boat.
Once he meets Miriam.
Yeah.
And that was a big deal.
I thought, well, even watching that, it sticks out.
Yeah.
It sticks out as like a... He's doing a weird angle right here. What this whole movie, it looks like James Bond is in the friend zone and he knows it.
Oh.
And he is secretly in love with his best friend, the cello player.
He kind of plays it cool. And
yeah, and like the whole
is,
like...
Yeah, that is interesting.
I thought it was weird when he hands her a mixtape.
There's a scene when he talks to Moneypenny, and I just caught this today for the first time, where he swats her on the ass, but they don't show it.
Yeah.
You just hear it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I never caught that before, and it's their way to keep it less sexist, but still... horribly sexist.
Like, I'm just gonna play a scene for Matt and Cole, and if you guys at home are following along at all, you don't even need sound for this, really. Watch James Bond, watch Timothy Dalton's performance in this scene. Now, here's the deal. Here's what I'm reading into this.
All right,
he wants to nail her so bad, but she's into the general. And he's trying to be the best friend who's like, oh, yeah, he's kind of a drag, right? Yeah. And
your boyfriend's
like,
not good to you.
Look at this right here. This is totally like guy in the friend zone pointing at things. Like, just like, let's get in a carriage. It'll be so much fun. We're friends.
And she gets all excited, and then
he
lights
flutters,
up
he
in
flutters.
A way you never see.
She's like, I can't wait to suck that Russian general's dick.
Is that
I think that's what she's saying.
Pretty much.
I think that's what she's saying. See, his whole performance is informed by this, I think.
He's going to show up with those handwritten white cards like the guy in Love Actually and try to...
Yeah, you're perfect. Uh-huh. And then he's going to walk away. Andrew Lincoln is that guy.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So weird.
In The Walking Dead, everybody. So that's my thought on that. And I think if you watch the movie with that sort of take on it, you'll have a lot of fun.
Not only does he slow play the entire relationship with her, like, she doesn't die. Like, that's, you know, often the Bond girls...
That's right. There's no second level...
There is no girl that dies in this movie.
Yeah.
We don't know what happens to the girl on the boat. He probably takes a puffer fish and puts it down her throat.
So let's just hear a little bit of our most British man in this movie.
I love this guy, and I love how their relationship...
And I love that they get scolded by a couple in the box next door.
Saunders, head of Section V, Vienna. You're bloody late. This is a mission, not a fancy dress ball. We have time.
It's in their contracts. They can't wear tuxedos in any box, other movies.
Between the KGB minders.
Whenever you play James Bond.
What?
It's in your contract. You can do other movies, but you cannot wear a tuxedo in another movie.
Seriously?
Yes.
That's why Pierce Brosnan never did Tuxedo Junction.
I know! Everyone's like, Tuxedo Junction is going to be huge. Pierce Brosnan. Forget the ladies
wow. for one
spot. So that's if you notice, think about like watching like the Thomas Crown Affair. He never has a tuxedo on because he can't.
That's crazy.
Even though they're at some black tie formals, though.
So Jackie Chan will never play James Bond.
That's right, because he wore a tuxedo in the movie.
The tuxedo.
Rumble in the Bronx.
And a penguin will never be cast as James Bond.
So they set it up. Bond gets a giant Walther.
Oh, I love that
sniper
thing.
Rifle.
It's huge. Got some silver rods on it that can't be used for anything. It's just
I think it's
absolutely.
I like that he puts on his competition glove.
Yeah, it's like those archery sets from the Olympics in the 1980s.
So, her name in the movie, I forget her name already.
Karamelovi.
Correct.
This guy, where is this guy from?
Jero and Krabbe?
He's great.
He's amazing.
I've seen him all over the place, and I really enjoyed him in this movie.
Yeah, he had one other big film. He's not in
He was
out
in
of
The
Africa.
Fugitive.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Fugitive, yeah.
I love that he flushes the toilet and then goes straight out the window, like after like walk right when he walked in it. Like, because that's what everybody does.
Maybe he spit. Maybe that's what's happening.
He's doing that thing where he's playing it so big but just small enough to still be believable. Like, he's as far as you can go in a James Bond movie, I think, and he does it well.
Yeah, so she so her plan, she's supposed to be doing what exactly? She's supposed to she is being told by him to shoot at him,
but
right,
she knows she has blanks. Yeah,
so she's even bothering to aim, which I enjoy.
But at this point, for the viewer,
we don't know what's happening.
You think that she's trying to assassinate him because he's trying to defect and she's been sent by the KGB or whatever.
How come this guy's not already at the door?
I know, right?
Well, he's running down and getting his keys as Yorgi is knocking.
Okay, so James then takes over this whole thing of getting him across into where are they going? They're going to Austria, right? No.
West Germany, probably.
By the way, guys, you should count how many times that boobs are used as a diversion in this movie, because it's a lot.
Well, there's the big...
It's at least twice. There's a scene now in the pipeline when they try to ship him through the pipes, and so the lady goes to distract her boss.
Like, I saw this movie when I was very young. I feel like this then informed my sexual desire for the rest of my life.
You're into big Russian women?
Yeah, apparently.
Oh, nice.
I like a chesty woman who can run a pipeline.
Who doesn't, right? God, if I had a dime.
And all the guys that her boss or whatever, that she literally just buries his head in her boobs.
Yeah.
And all he does is go like, ugh.
But as a kid, you don't question. You're like, that's sex, where you just do this in a woman's boobs. And that's,
motorboat.
Sometimes that's satisfying enough.
Yeah,
sure.
So there's some real, spy stuff happening here. They crouched under a window.
Yeah.
To get by the supervisor.
Yeah.
They end up in, I do like this exchange here. He's very, I think this is exactly what you're talking about, him like playing it to the edge of it being too comical, but like just pulling it back.
This one's especially designed to carry a man.
Pipeline? You mean our pipeline?
Great Soviet achievement, piping natural gas into Western Europe.
Because acting but as a character, that's the other part.
Right,
He's
got so it's a layered performance.
Never mind cake. If you open valve before 100, he will be boshed.
Figs, borscht, cake. There must be another way.
I think he's scared.
Put on the mask. And breathe normally.
Oh. Now talk. Oh.
Relax, Yogi.
Also, you'll notice there's a shot with his pipes outside, and it's got like a 45-degree turn.
Yes, I did notice that.
Never happened.
I also love that who knows how long this little pipeline trip really lasts.
Yeah.
But the second they land, they like yank him up and like throw him up the stairs. And he's just able to go. I think I would be like, can I have a second to steady myself?
What are you doing?
So here she goes. She's going to go distract.
Oh, this is amazing.
She's sexy, though.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Look at that onesie.
The old hair up, hair down trick.
Oh, yeah, that
Every time.
That's the signal for I'm ready to mate. Jeez.
I do like when she says, what kind of a girl do you think I am?
Yeah, that's nice. Good touch.
Russian.
I love she doesn't even taper off. She just ends it abruptly.
So we see Desmond Llewellyn pop up in his, what was it, 16th movie, I think?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Put him in a jet, they get him on a Harrier, they get him out of there.
And that was a big deal at the time, too. In the 80s, Harriers were big.
Harriers, I think, are still fucking awesome.
Yeah, they sure
can take off vertically. They're a jet that can just take, it doesn't need a runway.
Is this the first movie that kind of uses one? Bonds are always good at that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Almost too good sometimes. Like, they were the first to ever have an inflatable avalanche-proof parka, right? And then those are everywhere now.
Yeah, yeah, everyone has.
Yeah.
And also, because this is, like, late 80s and not quite 90s, 2000 Bonds yet, like, the inventions are still, like, slightly probable. It's not, like, not invisible cars, right, you know, yet. So, like, they literally had to take a Harrier jet to get them out of there, you know?
This movie gets good with
the
those.
Gadgets, I think, are
really the milk
good
grenades.
They're pretty nice.
I milk love the milk.
Grenades are cool. The whistling, the Philips, this was a new device at the time.
That was hugely topical.
This was a
things.
Philips, this is a keychain they used to sell, and they probably still sell versions of it at like Brookstone, but it's probably on that Bluetooth with your phone or something. But it was something for finding your keys, which was a big
was
problem in the
huge,
80s because we loved Coke.
Oh,
so sometimes it'd be in a pile of Coke.
And your keys would often be in a pile of Coke.
Yeah, because they were used for cocaine.
Uh-huh.
And everybody would just come in the door and just throw their keys
into the pile of cocaine.
Right.
But you would whistle, and a certain whistle, and then your keys would then beep at you.
Yeah.
So this takes a gadget and turns it into a gadget.
Oh, my God.
Which is what I like when they do that.
Yeah.
I'm more into that. I would be more into like a... like a Sonos speaker system that also did something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a gadget that does something else. Not like explosive toothpaste.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's this gadget on gadget violence.
I love gadget on gadget violence. So let's. So we see the Universal Exports outside. I guess they're in wherever they are.
Eastern Europe.
This is also where he enjoys a cigarette for quite a while.
Yeah, it's a long cigarette.
That's right.
Yeah, so...
Well, James, she's just your type.
Here's the new Money Penny.
Yeah, I got a thing for her.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
She's got a thing for Barry Manilow.
I know, that's a strange choice. They're trying to make her so square.
Yeah.
Explosive teddy bears. Well, that's all the KGB female assassins. You know, we could try freelancers stationed outside the Soviet bloc.
It'll have to wait.
I think Desmond Llewellyn actually memorized that line. Because he looked like he wasn't reading, which is a rare, rare treat for Desmond.
Or they just let him improvise.
Yeah. So we're back at Q Branch. Bond has sent the guy. The guy's gone in the Harrier jet. We have now. Bond wants to know more about this cellist assassin.
And also in this little invention exchange, we get the like little dig at America with the ghetto blaster.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Invention. And also. The music that plays out of the Ghetto Blaster is the most 80s music that you will ever hear.
I can't believe it's not another rendition of that Pretender song.
I know, it's all the Hitman will listen to. Necros.
What 80s music sounded like, everyone. And by the way, this gadget appears in Beverly Hills Cop 3.
In what?
Beverly Hills
Something
Cop 3.
We're making for the Americans.
When he has the boombox that also has the rocket launcher on it and the machine gun and
well,
the microwave.
That music, you're basically saying no one will notice if you walk around blasting Joe Satriani. Shoot a missile at somebody.
I had
you
a Joe Satriani.
Satriani's new album?
I had a Satriani album.
Did you?
In high school, yeah.
So
surfing
Chris
with
Martin
the blue.
Yeah, I had the surfing with the alien one.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
This plot is kind of reminds me of From Russia with Love in that it's just kind of unfolds over time. It's pretty generally really realistic. It's not too crazy. I like
there's
it gets a little confusing towards the end, but
There's one too many layers to this.
Yeah.
Joe Don Baker.
Yeah. Don't need him.
Who in the opening title sequence had to have it say Joe Don Baker as Whitaker? It's the only one that says that.
Yeah. Why well, Joe Don Baker was in the zone at this point in his career.
Is it because he got an and credit? That's usually what they
It's not
with.
Even an and. It's oh, like the really? Third credit. It's like it's Bond. It's a Timothy Dalton, Marion Diabo. And then it says Joe Don Baker as Whitaker. Then like Art Malik and
wow,
and
probably like preparing everyone for when he was Wade in Tomorrow Never Dies and Goldeneye.
He's also supposed to be completely humorless because there's that movie Mitchell that he's in that yeah. Mr. Science Theater 3000 did,
yeah,
and like they always say that like he hates it, like he thinks that they're jerks for making fun of it and this whole thing. Like,
really,
he was really mad about it. Yeah,
I'm not the hugest Joe Don Baker fan.
You don't like the JDB?
I don't love him because he kind of his presence in the Bond films has never been that's never helped the films in my eyes.
So let's watch. He goes pulls up to M's estate, which has gotten bigger since on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
No, it's not M's estate.
Oh,
it's
it is.
It's the it's called the Bladen House. It's their like MI6 safe house. They briefly mentioned that.
Oh.
Look at that Aston Martin, though. Oh, that's a good-looking one.
It is a good-looking one.
All right, now this guy who plays Necros, I like this guy a lot. I think he's the next best to Red Grant in the long line of blonde-haired henchmen.
So that rake just detects...
Milk.
Milk.
It's a milk-detecting rake. But... that's a gadget that does something, guys. It's a rake that is also a milk detector. So in the safe house, no one can have guns. Something I loved in this movie was watching the other MI6 guy beat up the henchman for so long.
Yeah, he does pretty good for himself. Yeah.
Like, that is a lengthy fight.
Do you notice, too, that Necros pulls up to the gate in the little milk wagon?
Uh-huh.
And he's like, who are you? The other guy had the flu. All right, let me frisk you. But don't even bother to look in the milk wagon. Like, he could have a thermonuclear device in that thing.
I thought that was interesting, too. Yeah. Like, they didn't even look in the... They didn't even bother. They were like, meh, as long as you're not carrying a gun.
And I like that his first thing to attack with is headphone cord.
Playing the Pretenders.
By the way,
I thought
that the parrot was going to come back into play.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Like the parrot was going to say...
Or do a double
something
take.
That someone...
Well, John Glenn...
But this guy's great.
Yeah.
He's really good.
Yeah, this is a good fight.
Like, you're like, oh, this guy's going to get killed immediately. Yeah. But no. Boom!
Oh, let me show you a little continuity thing here, too. Watch when he throws the big pot of water. First, he's got to try to carve him up the turkey carver.
Again, very 80s device. Yeah,
the second you see somebody using it, you're like, well, that's going to come into play.
Yeah. Oh, and then he grills his face.
Yeah, but he keeps fighting.
Yeah, this guy's good.
This guy was originally going to be Sean Connery.
This reminds me of the Never Say Never fight in the clinic. So watch. When he throws the pan here. Okay. Here we go. It lands in the counter.
Yeah. And gone.
Whoa.
It's one of those special hands.
Guys, you just all heard a visual continuity error.
There you go.
That pot just got Kaiser Soze'd.
Podcast first. Visual continuity error.
I, too, thought the parrot was going to come back because one of John Glenn's things is, like, there's always birds in his movies.
Oh, yeah, there sure are.
Like,
the pigeon double take.
There's
pigeons in four of the five movies he did where they, like, freaks Bond out.
Yep, and then again, in this one, the bird, there's doves on the at Joe Don Baker's house.
Yep.
Oh, right.
Joe Don Baker's character in this movie...
might be a bit of a buffoon.
And just the name, Brad Whitaker.
Whitaker.
I don't know. There's something doesn't work. I shouldn't say I don't like the man. I just, his roles in the movie are not so engaging.
If anything, this is definitely one of the most, like, Americans are stupid movies. Because even Felix Leiter, like, that's John Terry in this. He's like big Christian Shepherd on Lost, Jack's dad.
That's right.
But they make him, like, a total playboyish kind of, like, doofy dude in this one. I'm like, it's Jeffy right now, very different.
I know,
but
it might as well be Jack Tripper,
right? Though, about that, like, what? And then they bring back what's his face to play Felix in the next movie.
David Hedison.
Yeah, David Hedison plays Felix Leiter in two movies. He plays him in Live and Let Live and Let Die and License to Kill.
Yeah,
which are 25 years apart, something like that.
Yeah.
Right? 25, 27, 26 years apart.
No, 16 years apart.
Oh, you're right. My math
but
is
still,
way off.
Well,
there's been a few lighters
but
in
there's
between.
Also been a James Bond between the two. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Roger yeah. Moore had gone, and then Timothy Dalton's here. So now yeah. you're bringing in this back, this Felix Leiter, instead of just bringing the guy back from the previous movie. What I had forgotten watching License to Kill was that you established Felix Leiter in this movie, in Timothy Dalton's James Bond's world. And for what reason do you bring back the other?
They thought that that would tie you to the character more because it had more familiarity. But you think the more recent one would
have
would.
The most
yeah,
familiarity?
That makes sense.
But the part's so small.
The Felix doesn't do much in this movie. He's got like two scenes. He doesn't do a ton. But I feel like they always feel like they can replace that character because the first thing Bond always does is go, "Oh, Felix."
Yeah, right.
My old chum. There's always that. So. Oh, that's who that is now. Okay.
Felix, you old dog.
Felix Leiter, you old exposition.
The only American that I like.
By the way, when I was watching this earlier, so there's this guy. So, okay. So James Bond, they track down the cellist. She's at the conservatory in, I'll just say Brussels. It's not Brussels, but I'm just going for it. So he tracks her down there, finds out her address, gets on the bus with her. She gets taken off the bus by John Rhys-Davies. Salah.
Bad
and,
dates.
Yeah.
They're digging in the wrong spot. I am the monarch of the sea.
So, Jarvis Davis takes her off the thing. He grabs her cello and then goes to the bathroom to open the cello case.
Which looks like some kind of Johnny Five droid or something.
So, but there's this guy that's sweeping in the bathroom that makes eyes at Bond. And, like, is real, real overly suspicious of a man with a cello.
Right.
Now, I don't know about you guys, but if I see a guy with a cello, I assume it's just a guy with
a cello. Right.
Well, that's where you're wrong.
So he gets real suspicious, so much so that this sweeping guy, he sees the gun, and then, like, the next scene is outside of her apartment, and there's another guy sweeping, and... In my brain, I'm like, is this a network of sweepers?
Sweeper cell.
Sweeper cell. So he sees that there are blanks in the bullet. This is James Bond very much being James Bond, the detective.
I like it.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of that. There is.
Oh, I've never noticed.
There's a lot of Bond disobeying orders in this particular film.
Yeah. Bond rarely obeys orders.
True.
I've never really seen him go, oh, this is my mission. Okay, I'm going to go do it.
Roger Moore, he was the most toe-the-line Bond, I think.
Company man. Because he respected authority.
Yeah, sure, he's a company man.
Because he could compete a lot of times for the British off. He was also in the match.
Yeah.
He never won, but he was in the match.
Grand master.
So we go to here. James Bond finds the girl, tells her that he's a friend of the general and was asked to come get her, playing sort of up that I'm a friend of the friend, which again, friend zone. He's trying to get out of the friend zone. Yeah. Starting now.
Yeah.
He wants it bad.
Yeah.
Guys, he doesn't care.
Yeah.
It's 1987. He'll have unprotected sex with her. He doesn't care.
As long as it's monogamous.
As long as it's monogamous, unprotected sex. So we see the winterized Aston Martin, which is one of Matt Gourley's favorite cars.
I like the older Aston Martins, but not as much. Like, I like this one and the Honor Majesty's Secret Service one the best.
This one's pretty sweet.
They tune the radio. They get some sweet KGB frequencies. He's had enough of her already. But this one, so they're winterizing it, which means apparently skis. So they have an outrigger component to this for some reason.
It's not like it... I don't fully understand that because it doesn't lift it off the ground.
No. Also, what I really... First of all, this situation.
Ah, the laser.
Yeah, this is where the movie gets a little comical because the hole in the ice, too.
The hole in the ice. So the Aston Martin loses a tire, okay? And then it's just rim on ice. So then he uses the Aston Martin to cut a circle, just like Tweety Bird would cut underneath Sylvester.
Right.
A perfect cartoon circle that will then just fall.
Yeah.
I'm done. And then look at how thick the ice is.
Thick. There's no way.
The ice is a foot thick.
Well, it would have to be to hold all those cars and tanks and stuff driving on it, yet one rim will cut the entire
hole. So he cuts it. That, you know, they've had quite a comeuppance. Oh, we're going to get out. Outrigger. Let's see.
Oh, it does lift it.
No, it just lifts. It lifts it enough that the that rim is off the ground.
And by the way, it's like this whole time he's trying to play her like a fool by being like, "Oh, I just added some customizable elements." Because it's not till way later that he reveals to her who he is and
yeah,
that whole thing.
Right.
So like,
yeah, good point. Like, where
he's just
how
a dude.
Justify that.
Who bought a great car that has rockets and an outrigger
he shot
and
a rocket
lasers.
At a semi truck, and she doesn't. Blanche.
Okay, so here's the introduction of Whitaker.
Oh,
Lord.
This is also,
I would
they've
pay
already done this.
A lot of money for one of these Joe Don Baker statues that look like great military leaders.
And nothing like him.
So right now, John Rhys Davies is looking down the hallway. You're just seeing Caesar, Genghis Khan, Hitler, Napoleon, Caesar again.
Not even close to seeming like it's not a real person.
Right? And, of course, he's got the military uniform with his cap tucked underneath the little eyelid
under
at the top of his.
I always had a little problem buying John Rhys Davies as a Russian because I was so used to him as Sala.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Well, he's so British.
I didn't even know he was British, though.
He can. That's the Brits are good at accents,
yeah.
guys. Mm-hmm. Except for American accents.
Hmm.
That's why they almost always go Southern with it.
Someone please let David Tennant know that he should just use his regular voice.
In what?
He's in the American remake of his show Broadchurch as the same character that happens to be American
interesting.
Now.
Interesting. Wow.
Hmm. Is that show still on? No, it's on Fox. It's on Fox, guys. I think you should all watch it. But they do the real thing, like, yeah, America
really hit our
really
ours.
Wait, is that Grace Point? Is that the remake?
Yes.
All right,
Grace Point. You want to have some tea and maybe go over to Big Ben or something?
If you're ever around Jordan Morris, have him do his version of a British guy talking American. He just does a really great Liam Neeson, because Liam Neeson never has an accent that's remotely close to what he wants
to say. It's like Conrad.
So I really do like the setup here. So we see this is Joe Don Baker, the arms dealer.
In his crazy war room.
Yeah, he's a psychopath.
I do think it's pretty cool, though.
He replays battles for fun, but then plays them like he would do them. Yeah. So he's got like a Waterloo little set and stuff.
But the crazy thing is that I don't doubt that there are people exactly like this.
Oh, I'm sure.
Matt Myra.
I'm not like this. I don't recreate battles.
Oh, and a portrait of himself in the background.
Yeah. A portrait of himself that has a blue sash on it.
He's just commissioned.
So they fall in love a little bit, and this is where we find that the general has double-crossed the Brits and the Russians and is just hanging out poolside at Joe Don Baker's house. And they actually use Joe Don Baker's house for the location.
Yep.
I'd like to.
And Necro's the Hitman is just wearing a little Speedo.
Look at that, though. Man, he's a real specimen, that guy.
He is. He's a gorgeous man. Just cut.
Is he Carl's brother in Die Hard?
He is.
The
he's
one
that gets Tony or whatever.
First one killed, yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Guys, yeah. The 80s. Huh? Just like everybody was doing everything.
That's right.
Man.
Yep.
Let's see. $5 if you can boil down all of the plot. Go.
In the house. Jeez.
I'm not saying boil down the
fake
plot.
Fake defection.
Boil down the villainous. Boil down what is the villain doing in this movie?
Ultimately, it's all about
also,
an arms deal.
Hold
right?
on.
It's an arms deal. It's
an
opium and arms deal exchange. Yeah. Is
who is the villain in this movie?
Exactly.
There's three.
Three?
Well, I mean, there's Whitaker.
Yeah.
You argue that he's a villain.
Yeah,
there's Koskov.
Yeah.
And then there's Necros.
Yeah, Necros, I'd say, is a henchman.
He's a henchman.
Yeah.
But
you're right. It's not clear.
And the audience is led to believe that John Rhys Davies is a bad guy.
They're led to believe that Pushkin is a bad guy, but he's not. I mean, he's still KGB, but he's honorable in his position there. That's
and
the
I
whole
have,
thing.
I have nothing to back this up, but when General Koskov is in the Jeep in Afghanistan and he gets hit by the plane and then it blows up. It's a huge explosion.
He should
be dead.
The
next shot is him showing him get up from the seat. And I think maybe they killed him and then somehow...
Didn't test well?
Yeah, like, because even the next scene where he comes back in the, and Bond handles Whitaker at his mansion, they bring Georgi in and just
at the
say,
very
like,
end
we'll
of
take
it.
Him home in a diplomatic bag. It's a strange moment to bring him in just to say you're going to kill him
okay.
when you could kill him right there.
Right. Well, the whole thing when he kills him, when he should have died on the airfield, yeah. like, one, he had plenty of time to, like, I don't know, turn the wheel of the Jeep in any direction to get away from the plane. There's no, like, Necros has already hopped out.
Other than straight? Yeah.
Right. It's like Necros has already hopped on the plane. He's got no purpose. Like, what is he going to do with the Jeep now? He should just peel out and he's done. He's done his job. He doesn't. The plane crashes into it. It goes up in a big thing and you think, oh, for sure he's dead. Then it cuts away and it shows him like roll out and he's just got a little burn mark on his head. So that feels to me very post, like maybe that's where he died, but it wasn't enough of a death for him because he really screwed with Bond. Yeah. So
that's
let's
the problem
tag
with this
it on
film,
later.
Is it's so strong and then at the end it all
kind of peters out weird way.
Really, well, that's the interesting thing too. So like let's go back to this. Explain the villainous plot of this movie.
Oh my god. Well, they it's almost Die Hard in a way where they're saying it's really political intrigue, but actually it's about money and an arms deal, right?
Yeah.
So it seems like it's they're using MI6 to defect Georgi to get him
but
free.
But then there's opium and diamonds
that are used in the arms deal.
And a baboon heart.
A baboon heart, yes, of course.
Which is going to Christian Slater for the movie Untamed Heart. He's part of this.
I can't defend
this. Well, I just that's the thing I'm trying to like that's the it's so weird.
It's too complicated, and it doesn't resolve in a way that's like, but you almost don't care because it's so complicated that you're like, I kind of get it. Like, he was trying to defect, but now he's screwing everybody over, and there's opium, and there's guns involved, and that's what the Americans want. And
that's what most.
But was he trying to defect, or was that all part of the master plan?
I think he doesn't, I mean, but that's only part of the master plan.
I think ultimately,
okay.
I think the end game for Kozkov is he defects and he gets a ton of money and he just goes lives on some island someplace. Yeah. Like he just wants out of that whole thing. I think that's his end game.
Uh-huh.
Whitaker's is to get all that opium in exchange for guns or whatever. And I think that's kind of it, really.
Not good.
I think it's all this money, really, at the end of the day, that they're both trying to like get a big play now and then retire.
Here's where this one. I do like this movie quite a bit. But the whole, I want my villains, you know, people complain about, oh, it's a guy holding the world hostage with a nuclear weapon. There's some stakes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In this movie, it feels like, other than James Bond's life, which is always a risk, there are no stakes.
Well, the stakes are let's not forget the kill all spies thing. I mean, that's the stakes in a sense, is that they think that, like, they're almost kind of trying to start a war, too, with that whole thing. And then take their money and go away. So that's the only reason MI6 is involved in that whole thing is that their agents, buffoons, be many of them, by flying into trees, are getting killed off by these guys. But yeah, it's a bit of a mess, and it's not like really satisfying because you don't really care about Whitaker, honestly. Like he's just kind of a blowhard. So when he gets it, you're like, who cares? It's kind of an interesting sequence because it's just different. But
it feels like that should have happened almost before the climactic cargo plane scene.
Yeah, that feels like more the end.
That Brad Whitaker should have been killed somehow before. I don't know if it would work plot-wise, but it does feel like
it's like an epilogue killing.
Yeah, yeah.
And this
or
movie,
after the credits.
This is no, this is no short movie, by the way. This is a 2-hour and 10-minute movie.
Well, there's 40 minutes of romance in the middle there.
That's right.
So it's an hour and 4 minutes before they even get to Afghanistan.
Right.
Which, by the way, guys, Afghanistan looks like a lovely place to visit in this movie.
It does.
It has one of the most beautiful shots in any Bond film.
Which
that
is?
After they get teamed up with Khan and they're riding out to do the drug deal, there's this like, it's either a morning or a dusk shot. Do you know the one I'm talking about? With the sun kind of coming through the sand. It's beautiful.
It's like when Jonathan Rhys-Davies is riding away with Indy and his dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly
that's pretty
right.
much that.
It is. Yeah. Indy, Henry, I know the way.
So, okay. Bond.
Oh, this is the second boob diversion.
Bond is...
Oh, that's right.
Bond, yeah. It's a hell of a boob. I'd say it's the most skin we see on a lady in a Bond movie.
It might be.
So. Diamonds Are Forever. There's a thing in the beginning where he rips her bikini off, and you kind of see a little bit, but this is a little more sustained.
Yeah, but like, this is like full-on fun.
Side on fun.
Yeah. It's not full on. But so Bond is ordered by M to kill Pushkin.
He doesn't want to do it.
He doesn't want to do it because he thinks that no way he'd be doing this. That's crazy. I know the guy. You know, because everybody in this world of intrigue, apparently, they have socials. They have mixers. Maybe they have mixers in, like, Antarctica.
Yeah, they have espionage picnics once a year.
They all seem to, like, have a knowledge of each other that is, like...
They go to this park. They do three-legged races. It's great. It's really
fun. Yeah. It's like the Soviets are over there. They always try to win the egg on the spoon race.
Yep, always.
The Chinese are there. They're always trying to throw the paper airplane the furthest.
Ukrainians are great at the wheelbarrow races. That's fun.
And the Canadian guys, they just want to drink.
The people from Chernobyl do the three-legged race.
Guys.
Yikes.
What about the thalidomide babies? So, tracks him down. Bond tracks down Jonathan Rhys-Davies. Says, listen, I'm not going to kill you, but here's what's going on.
First of all, M says, if you're not going to do it, I'll get someone else to do it. And he goes, no, if it's got to be done, I'll do it. That's not exactly a friend. Like, no. That's not quite the same thing as, like, he's my colleague, I'll kill him. It's not like it's a dog.
Well, I think...
We were college roommates, but I'm cool putting a bullet in his head if needs be.
He should defer.
If someone has to kill Matt Gourley...
What?
I'll do it.
Well, see, that never came up, and just it feels trying to plant that idea.
It has to happen.
Okay, that seems...
But he's going to have a conversation with you first and make sure...
Hey, listen, I'm sorry, Cole wanted me to kill you, and there's no other
Wait, now you're in this?
Yeah, he wanted me to kill you.
Katie, do you know anything about this?
It's actually all Katie's idea, because she wants to sell the opium.
Oh, well, now this makes
Cole's
sense.
Cole's got the diamonds.
She's trying to defect to Earwolf.
I'm just here pretending to defect.
Okay, all right. I'm in. Yeah, go ahead. Kill me. Shoot me now.
So Bond goes to his local special effects guy.
But good luck finishing your last six James Bonding podcasts.
No!
And that was the boob diversion. Like his goon is coming in from the other room because he signals in with his watch. So Bond picks up the lady in the room, tears her robe off. So when the henchman comes through, there's a "bleh" moment. So Bond can assault him from behind the door.
He looks wet.
He does.
There's no sound on this, by the way.
We're not hearing anything?
Nothing.
Oh.
Well, you can all imagine it. It's beautiful. I'll take you through it.
So Pushkin's laying on the bed.
Okay, so Bond is essentially telling him, listen, here's what's going on, I think. We got to figure out what the hell this guy's doing, because even I can't understand the plot of the movie I'm in.
Yeah, and she's got that rhombus-shaped 80s butt that I love so much.
Hang on a second.
What? Don't you love that?
Rhombus-shaped 80s butt? I think you're just referring to a high-cut panty.
Maybe. I didn't know you could buy it. I'm into that.
Rhombus-shaped 80s butt is my favorite term that has ever been said on this podcast. Rhombus-shaped 80s butt. Do you want to see the 80s butt? It's coming up.
I want to see how a butt could be a rhombus.
Well, get ready.
Come
everybody
on over here, Katie.
Cue up your
Katie
copy
Money
of
Penny.
Living Daylights to time
so,
code stamp.
He's got to look around. He's got to quick go. What am I going to do to get a distraction? You, take off that. Great. And here's a rhombus-shaped 80s butt.
Let me draw it out for you.
For those of you wondering, Matt is actually drawing out the rhombus. Wait, cool.
It's not a rhombus. That's like more of a trapezoid, isn't it?
What are you doing now?
That's just... Is it a trapezoid? What's a rhombus look like? Oh, is this a rhombus?
Yes. Oh.
Yes. Well, I mean, I could see that. I could see that happening. I could see that being a rhombus.
Yeah, maybe. It's kind of a rhombus because it's more. Yeah.
You were right. And wrong.
All
right.
Either way, you can play a rhombus.
You gotta go bring those pictures into your schoolboy friends tomorrow and go like, "Look, I drew a butt.
Nice. It's a rhombus.
Check it out, guys.
We can all agree on that." Yeah.
But I mean,
and then
guys,
side boob,
clear nipple.
Very what? Pointy, too. Goes right to the North Star.
Did you say clear nipple?
Clear nipple. We got clear shot of nipple.
Oh, I thought you meant like transparent nipple.
No, it's not a translucent piece
of
skin.
That's why he's confused.
I can see your heart beating.
All right. So
is that his mistress or his wife?
That's a great question. That's his
because
wife,
because
right?
she's with him at the ceremony.
No, yeah, it was his wife. And his mistress. Okay. He kissed his mistress goodbye. And then went into the hotel.
Oh, I was going to say he's a sweet guy. I knew there was some kind of duplicity there. Yeah. That bastard.
But he does a great job of pretending to be dead.
Yeah.
James Bond gets to work on some blood packs. Like, yeah. I feel like he just did that himself. Like, he went to, yeah. like, Radio Shack and was like, guys, I need something.
Gonna... Then he went to the
but
ketchup
it's not
district.
Even electric. He's just got a bulletproof vest on and a pack of blood. The yeah. bullet doesn't.
Oh, he's like, guys, I'm going to need some... Red?
Some red and some Ziplocs. Let's do this.
Do you think that they just... Oh, you know what they should have done is drained... Like, they should have just taken a pint of his blood and then filled up each one of those with some of his own blood.
Oh, why?
So when the people, like, take a look at the scene, they'll be like, oh, yeah, it's his blood.
I get the feeling, though, that the hospital people are in on it because they leave him right alone as soon as they take him into the room.
Oh, yeah, they just walk away. Yeah. Oh, he's dead. Our work is done.
Watch. Okay, get him in here quick. Get him out of
there. Yep, gotta go.
See you later. It's not even a doctor.
Careful, we're almost given lines.
That's some over the top eye opening.
Yeah. Oh, it's like, hilarious.
No one does
that.
No one does it.
He does a great take.
Is this reading, John Glenn? Bigger, bigger. Okay.
Oh, sexy saxophone music.
Sexy saxophone music. He's in Afghanistan, mind you.
Right.
And these ladies are just like...
What, Cadillac or
T-Bird?
That's
a Lincoln.
I wish you guys could hear that music because it's pretty phenomenal. It's like completely weird and why, but yeah.
Here, let me pull this up.
Looking for a party?
There it is.
Seems like a good idea.
I even heard it from here.
Out of nowhere.
He's basically wearing an advent calendar of blood.
Yes. It's the first time.
Chest.
I've never been grateful. James Bond is a good shot.
First time, that is.
First time ever. James Bond is a
pull
good
over here.
Huh?
When is the part where he escapes through Morocco? Did you guys watch the deleted scene about how they had a magic carpet escape?
No.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
And I
That's
think
not true,
Dalton right? protested at some point. So he takes a carpet from one of the roofs to get away and he throws it on some electrical wires. And there's a scene of him like zipping down and it's kind of moving very slowly. And you could see where they probably would have put some like music in. And they wisely cut it.
I do like when he's doing his little rooftop escape after the assassination and he jumps into the laundry and there's a woman doing laundry there who just starts wailing on him, yes, trying to get past. Right. He looked more threatened by her than anybody else in the entire film.
So they're now in a Russian base in Afghanistan.
Where we saw it going.
Here's if you're somehow following along this plot and not...
I'm not, and I'm not.
...seeing this movie.
By the way, thank you both who are still listening.
Yeah.
You know, Cole, we have at least 4 people still listening.
All right, thanks, sorry.
Thanks, guys.
3 of them are in this room.
No! Let's see. So, this disjointedness of this all. She's worried that her boyfriend, who's the defector... is not coming back for her. So she finds out that Brad Whitaker is involved, and she somehow has Whitaker's phone number because Whitaker bought her the Stradivarius violin, which still don't understand that side plot.
Yeah.
So Whitaker buys her the Stradivarius violin that at the time cost $150,000. It's probably worth a couple million right now. I'm just saying, if you're investing, instruments are a good way to go.
You can keep telling yourself that.
So she calls, talks to him. The guy then convinces her to drug James Bond in the martini. He downs it, by the way.
Like just 2 seconds.
Downs that martini.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, is this where he's going to kill himself, too? Oh, no, that's in License to Kill.
Right.
Right? Where he gets drugged and he takes out his gun to shoot himself, which is pretty badass.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, this one, he's just like, I'm the one who. Was the one who tried to
Are you
shoot
sure
you
you're
in
not
passing
thinking
out?
About? Yeah. Are you sure you're not like thinking of this scene where he's trying to struggle to shoot the other guy?
No, there's a scene where he gets drugged. Isn't it License to Kill? And as he's passing out, he pulls out his gun and tries to put it to his head.
No,
and he falls.
No, you're thinking of this. He's going to do it right here. I think you're thinking of this. I'm going to turn the volume up just so everyone can hear what's going on.
It's still not on. Mm-hmm. It might be the ad down there.
How do you know?
There you go.
Because I was the man sent to kill you.
Why didn't you?
Yeah, that's it. He's going to kill himself.
No,
he's going to kill himself.
No.
He's for queen and country.
No.
Cole, where do you rule on this?
I feel like he sees him coming in and he's trying to get his gun out to shoot him. Because he tries, he kind of pushes it forward. Well,
thanks you're for just, coming in today, Cole.
You're just coming from a real dark place.
I like that idea.
Wouldn't that be badass if he's gonna like? He's
what
so
if that's
ready.
That's how James Bond ends his movie series.
But that's what
someone
I like.
Drugs him and he shoots himself.
About the Daltons.
And black screen comes up and it says James Bond will not return, and that's it.
Anyway, I gotta pee.
All right, well, have a good pee. We're gonna stop that. Well, Matt Gourley pees.
Keep going. You know
all right, Cole. Listen, the intricacies of this plot, it's now trying to explain it to an audience where I go, oh, this movie's way overly complicated.
It is. It's way too complicated.
I think there's four bad guys in this movie.
Okay.
You got your, I'm going to count the henchmen. You're going to count both, you're going to count General, you're going to count John Rhys-Davies. And then I think you have to, I'm going to count the White Tiger Storm or whatever, the drug group that is selling the opium to the Russians. So they're selling to the Russians to buy arms to fight the Russians?
Something like that. It's really confusing. All I know is the opium is going to get them weapons for their... And they're buying it from Whitaker or whatever. So like,
yeah, so they want to buy these... But are they buying... Like, is Whitaker ever actually going to purchase the weapons to sell to them?
It's weird because there's that whole thing where Pushkin calls him out on it, saying you haven't moved a penny from that account. Yeah. We've been monitoring it. Give us our money, our $50 million back or whatever. Yeah. And he's like, oh, it's too late. I've made promises, man.
Yeah, but like, and that's the other thing too that's very unclear. Is Jodan Baker's character, like, to me, it feels like he just, they want the diamonds to give them for the opium, right? Because they can't just give them cash.
Cash. It's confusing. There's a lot of different currencies.
And then where, at what point...
The diamonds are going to be exchanged for Beanie Babies. The Beanie Babies are going to become a 1934 Honus Wagner
princess,
rookie card. That's going to get turned.
What did I miss?
We're just trying to break down the economics of Jodan Baker's life. So essentially wondering...
90% of his income goes straight to army costumes.
But we're just wondering, like, so the plan... His plot. Okay, so he gets $50 million from the Russians.
Through the Afghanis?
No, he gets $50 million from the Russians initially. Here's... Matt, I need you to wake up.
And it's in an account, and he never touches it.
It's in an account, and never touches it. So his plan is to order weapons, whatever. He never touches that. Then he somehow gets his hand on diamonds, right?
Yeah.
And a heart.
And a heart.
Sure.
Diamonds and a heart. And then
I would hate to think that heart's going unused, guys.
Yeah. Well, they often come together.
His plan is to then exchange the diamonds for opium to then sell to get money that he already has sitting in his bank. Uh-huh. Okay. I'm just glad we're all clear on this. So Bond gets drugged. Him and Miriam Diabo get taken to the Russian base in Afghanistan.
I like this prison escape scene. That's funny. Oh, shit! Oh, is that the only metal finger? Is it doesn't let die?
He's actually freeing the son of it.
Basically.
You were fantastic.
There's a lot of fun in Afghanistan here. So they get off the base by putting on coats.
Yep, that's pretty much what they do.
They put on coats. That's how they get off base. They end up jumping into... they see this ambulance. They want to know what's going on here. They saw the heart already and the diamonds on the plane, on the cargo plane they've been brought here in. So they already know what's going on there. They then go to these Afghan freedom fighters, these Afghani freedom fighters. They free the one prisoner that's at the base who's going to be executed the next day. So he's in a debt of gratitude to them. So
a Wookiee life debt.
A Wookiee life debt, if you will. So what happens now is we find out this guy goes to Oxford. He's just hanging out trying to make everybody free or whatever it is he's trying to do.
Meanwhile, James Bond's working at Best Buy.
Got the khakis.
Uh-huh.
Got a nice blue top. Open coat. Open cup. Two buttons open. I feel like that's too many. I want to go one up. Just get one.
He did
up.
Stop at an Old Navy on the way to the base. That's where they got that.
Now, who are you?
Let's hear a little bit.
I do like Art Malik.
I work for the British government.
The nerve.
We've covered a plot by a Russian general Koskov to purchase American high-tech weapons. Arms that could
what
be used against
Rambo
human.
3 come out? Because it was basically the same story.
That is important.
Without any of
you must go directly to our commander in the
You just days. Mean guys with AK-47s on horses in the desert?
In Afghanistan.
Look,
teaming up with the Mujahideen.
Tomorrow, and after we've completed our mission, I'll see what I can do.
Yeah. That was a big, you know, what was going on at the time.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Is this a little bit of exposition? Do they know?
No, it's not going to get them.
No, here's where James Bond gets Bondy. He pokes into the thing.
That just sounds like a euphemism. Let's give us some specifics.
He pokes into the camel's sack.
He sticks.
Which is full of opium.
That's right. More peanut butter.
Okay, I'm just making sure my knife works. See you guys.
Samarapara was dead.
Raw opium. Worth $500 million on the streets of New York.
I know. He takes a tongue full of opium.
He actually does.
That's a $500 million of opium. He takes $300 of opium in that little fingerful of opium.
There's probably a cut scene with him laying back in a tub, some coins on his eyes.
So loud.
That's the chief of the Snow Leopard Brotherhood.
Who? He's the biggest opium dealer in the Golden Crescent.
So he worked for. So he's trying to get the opium off the streets. That's his plan, right?
Yeah.
His plan is to get the opium off the streets.
Who's
James
plan?
Bond doing?
Bond? I think he's
he wants to destroy the opium. Foil.
I think he's just trying to foil the Koskov Whitaker plan, right? I don't know, but it doesn't matter. We can't spend too much time on this. We'll drive
yeah. This is the point
crazy.
In the movie where everything doesn't quite make sense, but then shootouts happen and you're
yeah.
okay.
You
this
know
is
who?
The point in the movie where the climax begins. So the climax to this movie, literally. Okay, let's just see. The climax of this movie. When would you say the action starts? Right about.
Well, there's an actual gunfire.
So essentially here, right when Bond gets stuck on the.
Get stuck on the
Jeep. So the climax of this movie starts 1 hour and 41 minutes into the movie. The movie has a 30-minute climax. That is too long.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you consider the Whitaker stuff a climax, I feel like that's very
like
epilogue-ish.
That's, yeah, I guess that's
so
all.
It's like this sequence is like 20, like 15, 20 minutes.
There's a big fight on the airfield, and then a great fight on the cargo plane between Necros and Bond.
Oh, let's see. I do like this scene, so...
Wait, you're already to the end?
Well, I mean, what is there to see?
Well, let's talk about that fight now.
Oh, yeah, we should talk about that fight, because that is amazing looking.
There's a couple things about that. So they shot it, obviously, with two guys that had parachutes under their pouches or their jackets, and there were times when the bag of heroin was flopping so much that they would just have to leave and cut the take. And so the last shot after Necros flies out is B.J. Worth, and they show it in the movie when Bond gets like basically swung back in, that he was in danger of like getting knocked out and then just falling and dying. So he had to let go once or twice before he even could pull that off. And then also look at certain times in that scene, below them is a model of the ground. And when you know to look for it, it's really obvious. They're just... Whenever you can see Timothy Dalton and the other guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's totally.
I love that.
Very clearly a model. But that is like, that's some of that.
Oh,
time, too, she's trying to pilot in a way that she thinks is helping Bond. So, like, she opens up, when she sees that the guy, they're fighting in the back, totally normal, she opens the cargo bay door and then tilts the plane up, so all this happens, all this stuff starts spilling out.
Do you know what I think she... I think they were saying is she had hit the... She wanted the plane to go down.
So she hits the down thing.
So she hits the down because it says down.
Right.
And then it just
And then
happens.
The thing opens up. And then she decides to pull the plane up and all that happens.
He Necros could theoretically still grab onto the net there.
Good. It's a good screen. Of him flying back into the back of the cargo hold.
Yeah.
Wow. So they start to... He says there's nowhere to put it down.
But there's plenty.
But there's plenty of
plenty
space
of place to put it down.
It's a road.
But there is a road to put it down and just a very convenient sign of... you want to go to... Karachi, do you want to go to Karachi?
There's even like a 3-foot tall retaining wall that would kind of slow the plane down if it were to get that kind of safe way. But when they bomb this bridge right there, that shot, that's a foreground miniature. Pause it. So there's just a really shitty looking bridge behind them, and they did all of that wood framing, and that's shot in the foreground of the camera. And it hides what the real bridge looks like.
Oh, wow.
It's such amazing. The miniature work on the Bond
movies. Do you know what's funny about this, by the way? Is I was watching this and I was going like, well, that's clearly a miniature bridge. But...
You thought they did like an optical cut there or something?
Like,
no. It's a real bridge that they... All of this is in the foreground disguising the other bridge. And then when the bridge blows up and they showed it at a different angle, that's a small miniature. But they do amazing foreground miniatures in this... In the whole series.
I love this. They don't leave their man behind.
Yep.
He's getting shot at by compressed air and sparks.
And by the way, we neglected to say in that scene with the henchman dying is like that's one of the few times that Timothy Dalton does like a little Bond pun, which is when he goes, Miriam Diab goes, what happened to him? He says, he got the boot.
Oh,
he got
right.
The boot, which is the trunk. Now, that's actually very funny to me because he has enough time to see... That they're crashing and still delivering.
Take care of this.
But
got
the boot.
Get
we're about to crash into a cliff.
This is the. Let's hear a little bit of the Joe Don Baker, Timothy Dalton epilogue.
Oh, but then he also like acts like nothing's wrong. It's like, you know, Meade should have had 35,000 more deaths in his battle.
Over now. Well.
And then meanwhile, the CIA is just hanging out.
Yeah, John Terry's drinking some coffee on headset.
I think that's the one.
It's like I think that was Alexander.
Like, where are
they? It looked like
they have to be like in story.
Right. Steve Martin's killed. Huh?
he's
like
just
a little boy
fun.
In a candy shop.
But the actor himself is not connected to anything that's going on the board. He's just pressing buttons, and someone else is.
I'm replaying the battle as I would have fought it. Meade was tenacious, but he was cautious. He missed his chances to crush Lee at Gettysburg.
I've come for Koskov.
Well, hell, you can have him. As soon as I get my opium. Now, where is it?
Up in smoke.
You burned up $500 million?
Mm-hmm.
Joe Don Baker looks like some kind of weird little angel. Like a cherub.
He does. He looks
like a Campbell's soup, like one of the Campbell's soup kids.
I think he looks
up.
Sort of like a Charmin baby on the front of.
Yeah.
If the Russians don't get you, the Americans.
He's a Campbell's soup kid that grew up and never got attention again.
You know, me, it should have taken another 35,000 casualties.
Driven down by the quarry.
Could have entered the rebellion right then and there. Bill Grant would have done it.
Technology and a battle fast moving shelf.
Itself for a pellet gun, so it just looks a little less threatening.
I do like the fact that it's obvious that his gun has armor on it, but James still shoots it like 8 times. And he's just going ding 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 ding. Like, why not shoot him in the leg or the body or something? He empties his clip into a clearly bulletproof surface. It's not like he shoots it once. Right. Oops, that was my last shot. Yeah. Now I know. He shoots it like 8 times. Yeah. And then Whitaker goes, you've had your 8, now I have my 80. And then shoots a billion bullets at him, which he dives out of the way up very Mary Lou Retton-like.
There's a lot of counting of bullets being fired in James Bond movies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's right, Dr. No.
Yeah. Hmm. Anyway.
That one bomb.
Here's Jonathan Rhys-Davies, though.
In a diplomatic bag.
He met his Waterloo.
And
General Pushkin.
Thank God you're still alive.
Is Koskov staying? Oh. That's where they found him?
Whitaker.
I can't.
Has helped.
They must have gotten him at the airbase.
Thank you for rescuing
him.
And
just brought him back over.
It just feels really
There's a look that he gives right here to James. Like, where he's like, thank you for rescuing me. And then he looks at James like, hey, buddy, you're not going to blow my cover, right?
Yeah, I know. Like, you don't like that I'm getting away with this. Don't say anything.
Right there.
Georgi, Georgi. Put him on the next plane to Moscow.
Oh, thank you, General. Thank you so much. Thank you.
In the diplomatic bag.
Say what?
That's our finest bag.
Diplomatic bag.
Okay.
Meaning a body bag, right?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Right. It's not entirely clear. I mean, I've always taken that's what it means, but...
So
it either means a body bag or they're going to put like a hood back and kill him.
Do you notice who the conductor is here in this end scene?
Is it John Barry?
That's John Barry.
Nice.
Yeah.
They let him do it.
Uh-huh. I said they could have conducted it better.
By the way... In Austria, is it commonplace for them to have those powdered wigs at opera houses? Because I love it.
I don't know. I'm into
now
it.
Now I want to.
Yeah. I bought some lederhosen. Can you tell me? No joke.
You know what's funny is no part of me thought you were joking.
Well, then you know me well. They look so good.
So M's here for some reason.
Well, you know, it's Cast Bow.
Yeah,
he's in like what, 4 of them as the same Russian.
Oh, at least.
I hope you can find time to bring him
back to.
It's quite all right. General Gogol is now with their forces.
No, he's in.
He's arranged an immigration.
He plays this character. So you can come and go as you like. But he's also in From Russia with Love.
Excuse me.
All right.
I'm sorry we missed the concert. We had some trouble at the airport.
That joke still works, by the way.
What is it? I wish I could hear it because I don't have headphones. I bet it was great.
Sorry I missed the concert. Yeah. We had some trouble at the airport.
Hey, that's
they
funny.
Walk in with their full gun bandolero belts across their chests.
I bet you guys are probably spending Christmas and the holidays together, too. I didn't get an invite. You go into a cabin?
So James Bond, are we to understand that by this point, James Bond has not slept with her?
No, I don't think so. God, I don't think I've had the chance.
This is the performance he doesn't want to miss.
Right.
Oh, the performance of...
That's when he used the gadget for the fourth time.
You didn't think I'd miss this performance, did you?
Here's a different Pretenders song.
I just realized
if there was a man.
Yeah. There's the two Pretender songs. This one's here, and then the other one is the only thing that Necros ever listens to. It's always on his Walkman.
Virginia, hey.
There you have it, guys. There it is. That was the Living Daylights.
Yep.
That ends our Timothy Dalton era.
Well, it's a very short era.
As soon as it began. And next.
Next is The Spy Who Loved Me.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, like Heaven Above Me?
That's the one.
The Spy. The Spy Who Loved Me.
Hey, we should say thank you to Sean Sakime.
Yes, Sean. Sean's a big podcast listener. He probably listens. He listens to more podcasts than I do.
And he's been on Doug Loves Movies a few times.
Yeah, yeah, like he listens to more podcasts than there are.
Sean, I don't know what you do for a living. I think you're a lawyer or something like that. Whatever you do, you're independently wealthy.
Yeah, he donates generously.
Yeah.
To many podcasts.
Yeah. We have it on the books.
He's been on Super Ego too. He purchased the thing you could donate and be in a sketch. And he came over and recorded with us.
How'd he do?
He was great. He's good. A lovely, lovely man.
Shit, Sean, check out Pop My Culture, also on the Nerdist Network.
Yeah, Sean, take a look. Take a listen over at Pop My Culture. Sean came to the live James Bonding and gave us, Matt and I, both matching Walther PPKs.
Yeah.
That fire pellets. BBs, essentially.
Oh, wow.
I imagine Sean's at home, like his home is a lot like Brad Whitaker's.
Yeah, but instead of like what he does is he like puts like he has models of like Marc Maron and like Branson.
He plays and he's like fantasy podcast.
Let's have Hardwick come over and do a How Did This Get Made with Shear.
I just made Gallagher walk out on Marc Maron. This is great.
Oh my God. What if Todd Glass came out on How Stuff Comes Out?
Oh, my God. But, Sean, thank you. We meant to thank you on that episode while you were in front of our faces, but we were under time constraint and then forgot somehow.
That gun has found a place of pride stacked up right against my Ian Fleming books.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's great. Let's deal with Timothy Dalton.
Okay.
It's the last time we see him for us. I mean, we saw him, obviously. The last movie he did was the one after this. But we go backwards.
Here's what I think, and I realized this when I was watching this movie today. He in no way plays a caricature of Bond, which you know you could definitely accuse a few of them of doing.
Yeah,
Brosnan and Moore especially. The thing I like is that he plays it pretty straight, and then there are times where he will like bark at Kara, like "Get in" or "Be quiet." And it's like obviously not an admirable quality, and it doesn't make the character look good, but you feel like he's making that acting choice because he's saying, I'm playing a person who's kind of mean and flawed and a ruthless killer, and he's not afraid to make Bond look a little ugly sometimes, and I like that.
But I also think it's good because that's the tonal change in a James Bond that a lot of these guys can't do.
Yeah, that's right.
I think that's ultimately what spelled Dalton's doom is because this and License to Kill were very darker and more serious in a sense. And I don't think people quite knew what to, coming off of Roger Moore, didn't know what to expect, didn't like that in a Bond. They wanted it to be a bit lighter and a little, you know, more charming in a sense and less by the book. And then we got the Brosnan era and all the other stuff. And then it totally changed again with Daniel Craig. And now it's more of a, you know,
brass text Bond. License to Kill is so dark.
Oh, it really
and yet it's
dark.
The like brightest color one.
Yeah,
it's such a contradiction
because you know a lot of it takes place in the fictional South American country
of Miami Vice.
But Timothy Dalton, I wish we'd got to see a couple.
Did
more.
You, I read an article once. We may have talked about it on the show, but that was probably 6 years ago. So forgive me. Mm. They had an outline for his third movie, and it was like. A lot of it took place in China, I want to say, or something.
No.
It's worth looking up, but it was really interesting to read and to imagine what would have been.
And what happened? Oh, they just ended up getting too tied up in the legal battle
and
with
I think
Kevin McClory, right?
Bowed out, right? I think he kind of
because
he's
like, well, I can't wait around.
And he probably wasn't getting a good reception by that point.
Yeah. But.
We weren't going to enjoy Peking Nights. That wasn't going to be a good thing. So.
Have you guys seen Penny Dreadful?
No,
I have not either, but I hear good things.
He's great in Doctor Who when he plays the leader essentially of the Time Lords.
He's great in everything, and he's the best Dalton, he's ever been in
Dalton
that.
Is so good in Hot Fuzz.
Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, he's the best he's ever been in that Everything or Nothing documentary where he just says, "We were doing it, and that's what you did." And he's just getting all fired up. Have you seen that? It's amazing. His segment alone is the best part.
He's great.
And he's got long hair. He's just kind of gone a little mad.
Nice.
Yeah. A little wild hair.
In a good way. But my girlfriend saw that, and she's kind of like, I'm into him.
And this movie did well. It was a big hit. It was a success.
Was it really?
Yeah, it made it like 100 and something million. It did well.
License to Kill is really the only one that kind of didn't do well. And Man with the Golden Gun.
Well, because License to Kill, I feel like they came at it too late.
The second film of most of the Bond actors aren't so good. Tomorrow Never Dies.
I disagree with you.
Quantum of Solace.
Yeah. Ugh.
Quantum of Solace. So
From Russia with Love is about the only
Russia
second
with
one.
Great, and I think Tomorrow Never Dies is excellent. And we love The Man with the Golden Gun. We love The Man with the Golden Gun.
I like it, but it's not good.
So? Cole, do you have anything you would like to plug while you're here on James Bonding?
I'd like to plug in some more headphones for you guys.
That would be great. I wish I could understand you.
I don't know, Pop My Culture Podcast. It's on Nerdist. SF Sketchfest coming up in January, February. A lot of podcasts you know and love from this particular network will probably be there.
That I love that that now goes coming up January and February. Like, it just gets longer and longer.
It's been kind of consistent the last couple of years, but it's January 22nd through February 8th, so it's 18 days.
Wow.
You guys
straight.
Essentially
take Super Bowl Sunday off, and that's it.
You just move up there for a month, right?
Yeah, I live out of a hotel for 3.5 weeks.
Yeah.
You really do, right?
I really
do. It's a hell of a feat you guys put on, and it's really fun.
It's the most fun festival.
It really is.
That's what we tried to do.
That's great.
Thank you guys for doing it here.
Of course. We appreciate being asked, and hopefully, maybe, you know, someday James Bond will go up there. I don't know, whatever.
Well, let's figure that out. We'd love to have you guys.
Even if it's 10 years from now, we'll still be going.
Oh, the beauty of this podcast is we have to take it on a dry dock every couple of years.
Right.
I like to imagine that our podcast sits in a dry dock.
People are getting real snarky on Twitter.
You know what? People, thank you for listening. That's all I'm going to say, honestly. Yeah. Thank you for listening, and we try to get them out as often as we can. We got really busy. Matt got a bunch of Volkswagen situations.
He always puts this on me.
At midnight all the time. You didn't let me finish my sentence.
Sorry, I love
you.
You
you guys could do, when you've gone through all the Bond movies, is then go back and do the podcast on your podcast, not that Bond movie.
Oh, wow.
You see what I'm saying? So
James Bonding?
Yeah.
What is your favorite thing you said, Matt Gourley, on that episode?
The one where I was that guy.
Look, if we take 3 years, we might be able to figure out what happened in Living Daylights plot-wise. We've got a couple more years to really digest it.
Oh.
Then we can go back and figure it out.
Guys, thanks so much for being with us. Thank you for listening and putting up with us. James Bonding Pod on Twitter. You can follow us. You can follow Matt Gourley at Matt Gourley, G-O-U-R-L-E-Y. You can follow me, Matt Myra, at Matt Myra, M-I-R-A. Cole's also on Twitter. I believe it's Cole Stratton.
At Cole Stratton.
Oh, Cole Stratton.
I got it, guys. I got it.
Yeah, nailed it. Katie, of course, you can follow. She's KT_money, if I remember correctly. Follow her on Twitter. She keeps the podcast anchored and kicks me out of the studio when other podcasts need to use it. So thanks so much, everybody.
Got some axes to grind.
And James Bonding will return
with the spy who loved me.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
Hey, this is Arnie Niekamp from the improv fantasy podcast Hello from the Magic Tavern. I fell through a dimensional portal behind a Burger King in Chicago into the magical land of Foon, and I started a podcast. Season 3 has just begun with a brand new adventure to defeat the Dark Lord. If you're a new listener or you've fallen behind, Season 3 is a great jumping on point. And we've got great guests like Justin McElroy.
I sound like a fancy college professor. Eight nuts.
Rachel Bloom.
You want to see my collection of men corpses and one woman?
Felicia Day and Colton Dunn.
You've seen me have intercourse with a variety of species.
It's a bummer.
Andy Daly.
You have the members of Genesis listed, but Phil Collins is crossed out and then circled and crossed out again.
Yes, I have killed Phil Collins twice.
Thomas Middleditch.
Jesus! I mean, Jazos! Ruler of the Eighth Circle!
And that's just the beginning. Season 3 of Hello from the Magic Tavern is out now. Listen in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.